Michelangelo here, you know, the master of the whirling pizzas.
Greetings, minions. This is Lord Crab.
Hello, everybody. My name's Grayson.
And you, my friend,
are listening to Turtles Forever.
Brought to you by my radical dudes,
Bebop and Rocksteady.
Cowabunga!
I crack myself up.
Cowabunga, dudes and dudettes, and welcome to a Saturday morning slice. I'm your host, Rob, and happy March, everyone. I hope everyone had a wonderful February. And you were able to read a bunch of Ninja Turtles stuff, enjoy some time with your family, all the good stuff over the past month. This month, we have some really cool things coming up. But first, before I get into all that, I have some listener feedback and some slices of pizza I'd like to give out to a few folks. First of all, we have a new listener. His name is, well, his handle on Twitter. Do we say handle anymore? I don't know. His username on Twitter is OriginalJC, and he just recently discovered Turtle Flakes, which, wow, I didn't even know the feed was still up for Turtle Flakes, so that's really cool. I guess he started listening from episode one and has reached out to me on Twitter and just said how much he's enjoying the show, which I am so grateful and humbled to hear that. That is really cool that people still listen to some of those really, really old episodes, which, come to think of it, you know, I think once we get into the month of August, the show would have turned 10 years old. I mean, I'm still talking about Turtles 10 years later, and I still feel very much like a rookie. Go figure. So first of all, thank you so much, JC, for reaching out. It's really cool to hear from new listeners. It's always one of the most exciting things for me as a host is somebody discovering what we've been doing and actually enjoying it. And speaking of friends of Turtle Flakes, a longtime friend of the show, Michael Scott, not that Michael Scott, but dear friend of Michael Scott, he reached out to me on Twitter as well and said that his friend has created a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles song, and it's called We Ain't Come to Lose. It's a Shredder song, and it is awesome and hilarious. So I wanted to go ahead and give a little teaser right here. One of my favorite parts in the whole song is just seeing Shredder kind of nod in the foreground, like, yeah, and Bebop and Rocksteady are like booty dancing in the background. it's great. So guys, you got to go check this out. I left a link in our show notes so you can see the full video, but here's a little teaser right here.
With full force, mess up your facial features. Hasta la vista, I'm selling all your little Caesars. All y'all stuff your face with is pizza. Pizza crack like a hard-boiled egg on Easter. See these muscles on me? I could beat your teacher. I defeat Leonardo, y'all become the weakest. I take off all of your masks and dismantle your features. Shredder, I cross the line like a letter. Smash all of you turtles, put you back together. Indeed, I squish turtles like a tight girdle. Any obstacle, I clear it like a high hurdle. My stomach cringes for all of you fake ninjas. Fighting you a winless, show you what revenge is. Diabolical moves, strike with mad vengeance. Ask Splinter, he not coming with bad intentions.
So kudos and cowabunga to Michael Scott and Michael Scott's buddy who created this. All right, hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. All right, so last thing as far as listener feedback goes, we received an email, and this is the first time for me, I think, receiving an email from an 8-year-old. And they reached out once again to the turtleflakespodcast@gmail.com email address, which is really neat that we're hearing from people that have, again, kind of discovered the old show and are reaching out. It's so cool to see this. So anyways, his name is Mayan. I'll just keep it at that. I'm not sure if he wants to share his last name. But Mayan reaches out in his subject line and says, I am so excited right now. So he says, okay, so first of all, I'm 8 years old, and I am a big fan of your show, which I don't even know how he found it, but thank you so much, Mayan. And on my 8th birthday, I got a Donnie and a Shredder in a doubles box, and from a little library, I got 2 TMNT picture books. My 8th birthday was TMNT themed, and so were the invitations. Cowabunga. So I love that. I love that so much. Just to hear from new fans, and to be an 8-year-old, so he probably grew up with the Rise of the TMNT, maybe even the 2012 stuff, the late 2012 stuff. But I think that is so cool that Mayan has reached out. So happy birthday, buddy. Thank you so much for the email and cowabunga. If you ever want to reach out to us, guys, our current email is turtlesforeverpodcast@gmail.com, or you can always give us a call at 865-312-7260. We would love to hear from you. All right. So just to give you guys a heads up of what's on the menu for the month of March. First of all, we're returning to the 2003 era of the TMNT. So we're going to be covering the 2003 cartoon, Season 1, Episode 9, The Garbage Man. And also hopefully talk about Season 1, Episodes 10 and 11. That's The Shredder Strikes, Parts 1 and 2, which I remember those being really good. So excited about that. But also we're going to be talking about Tales of the TMNT, Volume 2, Issue 8, entitled Virus. And fingers crossed, we've got a special guest for that episode that we're really excited to talk the comic about. So stay tuned for all that this month. And last but not least, what have I been up to? Well, I've been doing a lot of reading. I've been reading this great book. It has nothing to do with turtles, but I'll just go ahead and lay it out there anyway. It's called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And it's part biography about Fred Rogers. And it's also, the majority of the book is just lessons he's learned in his 40 years of television, or over 30 years at least. And one of the things I love that he would do in a lot of his speeches and a lot of his episodes, he would talk about gratitude. And he would talk about those who made a big influence in his life. And he would also urge his viewers and his listeners to take a minute, just take a full minute to think about somebody who made an impact in your life. I think for me, there's been many, but to tie it back to turtles, of all things, there's two particular men that I've gotten to know through this show, and I'll keep them nameless, although you could probably figure them out, that have accepted me, the good, the bad, and the really ugly of me, and yet they've still chosen to be my friend. I don't have to pretend to be anybody I'm not in front of them. They just like me for me. And I know that sounds cheesy. I know this has nothing to do with turtles, but hey, we're human beings too. So I just encourage you guys today, as you're listening to this, to think about somebody that accepts you for you, that chooses to be your friend and chooses to love you, all of you, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, unconditionally. There you go. There you go. There's a little thing to think about this month. I'm going to try to think about it every single day. And I really feel very, very grateful and blessed and humbled that I have a few, that I can say that, you know, because growing up, I didn't have many. But now as an adult, I've surrounded myself with people that accept me for me. And I'm grateful for them. But that's enough of that stuff, guys. I hope you all have a wonderful month. Hope you enjoyed this particular episode. And stay tuned for some great stuff to come. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. It really is a blessing to do this. And I'll talk to you later. Cowabunga, dudes. Happy March.
Hello, violators. You're in Casey's comic classroom. Prepare to be schooled.
All right, my friends. So now we are on issue 2. All right. So we're nearing the first half. We're nearing the first half of The Secret History of the Foot Clan. A couple of thoughts on issue 1 real fast. Love the artwork. It is absolutely incredible. And I love all the different players in the game in that flashback. I really respect Oroku Maji and his decision and Masato's decision to acknowledge that, hey, our leader is corrupt. We have to do something about it. And their plan actually works. They stop Takeshi Tatsuo. But what I find interesting about the storyline is they think they're doing the right thing, but somehow, based on Kitsune's reaction and Tatsuo's reaction, they're saying, no, you're actually ruining things. So maybe they know something again that Maji and Masato don't, which has me invested in the storyline. And also, what's this Dr. Miller's guy all about? I don't think that Raph would have brought up the fact that he doesn't trust him if there wasn't a reason not to trust him. But other than that, yeah, just really, really great storyline, great pace. And here we are jumping into issue 2, which I liked even better than the first. So here we go. All right, so we get a city shot of Japan here, a current city shot, and I believe this is, I'm not exactly sure where this is. Looks like New York City still, because I do think I see the Empire State Building in the background. April is making their way to see Dr. Miller. All right, so on their way, Casey says, okay, what exactly are we going to ask the professor? You know, Casey, you didn't have to come. Well, she has a point. All right, but you know what? I think everyone's shutting Casey down a little too easy here. But I love Casey's response. I'm a team player, April, you know? Leonardo, he's looking out the window here. Guys, look. Isn't that Dr. Miller? April says, that's him. And we see a blue dialogue box, which we probably can infer that's Leonardo here. It's Karai! And Karai and Dr. Miller are having this conversation as they're about to enter a limousine. Funny little shot here of the Turtles and Casey and April looking out the van window here. And I just love these angles in these shots. Matias Santoluco does such a great job with his layouts. He's one of my favorite artists on the IDW series. Him, Sophie Campbell, I mean, they do so well with these angles and perspectives. Raph says, yeah, and he's looking pretty friendly with her to me. Casey, I knew my gut was onto something. You know, and he's right. Leonardo, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. He could be in danger. So now, the van is going to tail them. So as the limousine is driving through the city, we get a conversation between Dr. Miller and Karai. And you got to believe this is an awkward conversation because Karai's in the middle. Two Foot Clan members are by her side, and they're just staring angrily and intensely at Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller finally breaks the awkward silence. So are all these men for me? So we get another, in the next panel, we see two men are crowding Dr. Miller out. One of the guys so big that he's actually got his elbow on Dr. Miller's arm. Dr. Miller looks very nervous. He goes, I'm just a professor, not a spy. And he looks over at the guards and he goes, oof, tough room. Cry, she's having none of his humor. She goes, Dr. Miller, we require your expertise, not your humor. Let us continue this ride in silence. Which, once again, gotta be awkward because they're directly facing each other in silence. But Karai's perceptive. She goes, wait, that van. She looks out the window and sees the turtles are tailing her. We're being followed. Evade them. She talks to the driver. Hi. So now the limousine screeches off. And April's trying to tail them. Looks like they spotted us. I won't lose them. So they're making their way. Excellent chase scene here. And now Dr. Miller's starting to already get concerned. Hey, what's going on? Are we being chased? Cry goes, silence! Prepare for battle! So now, great shot here of Karai in the foreground. And once again, Dr. Miller, he's in over his head. He sees the guards who are sitting next to him putting on their gear. And he goes, who are you people? So they burst through this toll gate, and they're in this tunnel now. And what a cool shot. So we see the Foot Clan, they're crawling out of the limousine, about to attack the van. They jump through the air. Raph and Leo are on the top of the van, getting ready for combat as well. All right, so Casey goes, incoming! And Raph, yeah, Case, we ain't blind. So they're fighting the Foot Clan on top of the turtle van, as I'm sure they're going probably 60, 70 miles an hour. Pretty intense fight right here. And Raphael goes, keeping this thing steady will help April. April shouts from the driver's seat, I'm doing my best, as the turtles are fighting the Foot Clan on top of the van. And Casey punches one guy off, must be one of the leftovers. And he goes, oh no, you don't. Guys, watch out. Another Foot Clan member is about to jump off the limousine and strike. There's still one more, Casey warns him. Leonardo goes, take care of it, Raph. I can handle these two. And Raph's got this grin. He goes, almost like he's saying, my pleasure. But instead, he just says, you got it. Raph jumps off the van as the guy is jumping off the limousine. So they're both in midair here. Oh, man, what a cool shot. Raphael jumps over his head, kicks him down. The guy falls right to the street. And Raphael jumps back onto the limousine. He confronts Karai and goes, well, look who it is. Karai goes, lowly beast. Aw, you're going to hurt my feelings talking like that. But Karai is like, okay, I'm not going to take this bait. So she karate kicks him. Karai kicks him right in the turtle shell, right in the chest. She goes, perhaps I should hurt something else. But what's cool is, as she's kicking Raph off of the limousine, Raph throws one of her shuriken, who that actually has a tracking device in the center of it. He throws it into Dr. Miller's briefcase as he shields himself. Karai shoots her bow at the turtle's van, causing the tire to flatten, and the van crashes against the tunnel wall. And one of the poor foot soldiers crashes against the tunnel wall as well, but nobody seems to care about him. But really cool shot of Leonardo hopping off the wall, dodging the van, crashing into the wall. Leo goes, "Are you two okay? We have to..." Casey says, "You guys get after him. I'll check out April." She goes, "You'll do what now?" Which was funny. So Leo and Raph, they run off. So Leo's in the foreground, Raph's in the background. Leo and Raph are pursuing Karai and her men. One of the men tries to get Dr. Miller out of the car. Leo goes, "Karai!" Karai uses one of those smoke bombs to blind the turtles, and she is off. Classic ninja move right there. Finally, Leo and Raph, they return to April and Casey in the wrecked van in the tunnel. "You guys all right?" "Casey, a couple of scratches, but we're fine. Lucky for us, this van's practically a tank." April, she's leaned against it as well. "Did they get away?" And Raph goes, "Not for long. Leo and I borrowed this thing Donnie's been working on. Check it out." So now they got this tracker device on them, and they are watching their location here. "We planted a tracker on them." And now, unbeknownst to Shredder and the Foot Clan, that tracker's still going off on Dr. Miller's briefcase, as Dr. Miller and Karai and eventually Orokusaki are going to have a discussion. "Don't understand," this is Dr. Miller here. "I don't understand. Why did you guys bring me here? What do you really want from me?" Karai, who's definitely lost her whole, business front and everything, she's being as blunt as possible. "We want exactly what I said we did, Doctor. My master will make all things clear." And finally in this issue, we get Orokusaki walk through a doorway. "Welcome, Miller-sensei. I must apologize for the stress you've been put through today. However, as Karai said, our offer is genuine. We would very much like to make use of your expertise. Karai." So Karai opens this briefcase and what looks like, who knows how many dollars. Yeah, but I'll say at least, that looks like $5 million to me. I'll just say that. Dr. Miller, he looks very concerned. He goes, "What have I got myself into?" Saki replies, "You've simply found what you've been looking for, Doctor. We are the Foot Clan." And Sean Lee does a great job with the lettering there, with the Foot Clan, almost looking like the Friday the 13th font in red. Dr. Miller goes, "This is impossible." Shredder continues, "We've been following your work, Doctor. You have found things that have been lost, even to us. Would you like to see just how much more you can find with the proper support?" And then Karai presents him with another box. Dr. Miller opens it, and in shock and surprise, he says, "The Ashinohimitsu." Okay, so now we get a break in the present time to once again explain what's happening in a flashback in feudal Japan. A little bit of time has progressed. Our Foot Clan masters are still Maji and Masato, but they're older men now. Maji has had a son, and his son's name is Saki. Okay, so we get the first shot of Saki here, and we hear this voice saying, "Now, young Saki." He's got this container and a bunch of swords and some things before Saki. And this Japanese monk says, "Which of these belongs to you?" Saki stares at all the items and he goes, "This, and this, and this." So one of the boxes looks very similar to the Ashinohimitsu. After hearing Saki's response, we see the monk staring in concern at Masato and Maji. "And this, I make this." And it looks like it's the Ashinohimitsu. It's this giant book. And the little boy is just grinning ear to ear. So Maji snatches the book from young Saki's, from his son. And he goes, "No, none of these things belong to you, Saki." Saki cries. As Masato walks young Orokusaki away, the monk talks to Maji. Both are clearly concerned about Maji's son. "I'm sorry, Master Maji, but we cannot deny what we have seen. Tatsuo Takeshi has been reborn. Maji continues, "In the firstborn of his assassin, my own son, the witch's curse has borne fruit." So, let that sink in. So, Saki is basically Tatsuo Takeshi reborn, according to the legend, according to the curse of Kitsune. That's not a good sign because Maji loves his son. He doesn't want to see his son turn evil. I mean, and any father, you know, you never want to see your children make the wrong choices or do these evil things. So I can't imagine, you know, necessarily, oh, I don't know, an evil witch turning your son evil. But I like this part from the monk. "Iroko Maji, you must listen. Even though it is Tatsuo Takeshi's soul inhabiting Saki's body, he's still your child. And children are like blank washies, ready to absorb all that life gives them." I really like the scene here. This is why I like this issue so much. So we see Maji kind of looking off in the distance in the background here. We see Misato and a young Saki playing. And you know, Saki's just this innocent kid. He doesn't know that he's Tatsuo reborn. He's just a kid. But he has these instincts that are just already in him, like the fact that he just reached for the Ashi no Himitsu for no reason. So now we see that Maji's got this incredible burden of how can I try to train him to be the best moral person he can be while he's also cursed to be an evil person. So, you know, can raising a child in the right way overcome a curse? We will soon find out. The monk continues as Maji looks at his son playing with Misato. "You have the chance to save the spirit of a betrayed and bitter warrior with the most powerful and valuable of dharmas, love. You can help to achieve a balance, Iroko Maji, and break the cycle of terrible karma that began over 100 years ago. It will be difficult, but it can be done. Time will tell what kind of man your son becomes." All right. Fast forward a couple more years. Now we see Saki. I would assume he is a young adult at this point, or maybe late teenager. So we see an older Misato here. His hair is gray. We see this must be some kind of festival here, celebration, after a very important mission by the Foot Clan. "We gather to celebrate. A feast has been provided by the merchant Kaneko in gratitude for avenging the murder of his son and restoring his family's honor." Now we see an older Saki here bragging like crazy. "Ochi's guards were almost a challenge. Still, the contract could hardly have been completed without my involvement." And then we finally see two new characters here in this flashback. We see Hamada Yoshi and we see Tang Shen. They're listening to Saki brag to these ladies. Of course, the ladies are gushing over him. Tang Shen says, "I'm surprised he hasn't yet taken credit for the entire mission. I do wish you would correct him, Yoshi." Yoshi just kind of grins. "I would, my love. But I find that I prefer his boasting to his attempts at conversation." Which is a funny line right there. I like that. Yoshi's got some sense of humor. See, Splinter always had a great sense of humor. So Tang Shen and Saki, or Tang Shen and Yoshi, they're holding hands here. And Yoshi says, "Oh, I must speak with Master Misato. I'll return in a moment." Tang Shen says, "Hurry back." And grins at him. As Yoshi leaves, the next panel, Saki just swoops right in, already starting to flirt with Tang Shen. "Why, Tang Shen, what is this? Has Yoshi left you all alone?" And then Saki puts his arms around Tang Shen. But Tang Shen's having none of that. She slaps him right across the face. Probably Saki, hurt pride much, much worse than his cheek. He's about to backhand her. He goes, "You..." But Yoshi blocks his attack and then throws Saki down. Of course, Saki really bruised now in his reputation. Gets up and he says, "You've made a mistake, Hamada Yoshi." Yoshi's not backing down as he defends Tang Shen. And we see this disembodied voice say, "Stop!" It's Commander Misato. "This is not the time for a fight. It is a time to celebrate. And for more than just one reason. Yoshi, walk your lovely wife home and then join us at the castle. Saki, you come with me. But was I being too vague, Orokusaki? No, Master. But he started it. And it's great here. So these young adults, you know, they still fight like children here. So now we see Saki's father, Maji, who's aged as well. Maji's trying to give him some fatherly advice. You must have more patience if you ever expect to lead, my son. And far more respect. But Yoshi, he comes in and he goes, Masters, you've requested my presence? So Maji, he talks to Yoshi directly. Ah, Hamoto Yoshi, yes. First, allow me to offer my congratulations. I hear you to be a father soon. There's our turtles. But that was not why I summoned you. Ochi's assassination was an important contract and a dangerous mission, but it was also a trial. Masato chimes in. The council has met and agreed. It is time to increase your responsibilities within the Foot Clan. Tomorrow, you will both become our newest chunins. All right, so that is their closely tied students here. What? Him? So Saki's not happy with this. He is so jealous. Of course, Maji tries to talk sense to him. Orokusaki! But Masato stops him. Just wait, Maji. If they are to lead one day, they must learn to work together now. Masato turns to Yoshi. Yoshi, go. Talk with Saki. And do not let this be the time that you fail to control your own temper. So outside, we see a ticked-off Orokusaki staring at the water. He must hear Yoshi coming. And he goes, have you come to mock me then? Or perhaps to fight? Yoshi says, I have no wish to fight, Saki. Masters Masato and Maji are worried about you, however. I share their concern. Oh, do you? Look, I recognize your anger. And I do not envy you the struggle that you will have to conquer. That you will have to conquer it. So this makes me think, does Hamada Yoshi know about the curse? And does Saki know? Saki replies, you know nothing of what I feel. My entire life, I felt destined for greatness, but my own father has always been quick to disagree. I've worked hard to prove my worth, and now, when I'm finally recognized for these efforts, I'm forced to share the glory. Okay, so that tells me a couple things right there. Maji might not have told Saki about the curse. But there's something in Saki that says, like, he feels destined to be something more. Saki continues, perhaps my destiny is not what I always believed after all. And then here we see, as Saki's looking at his own reflection in the water, we see Kitsune in the background, unbeknownst to him. Yoshi, or consider that your anger is what truly delays your destiny, Saki. Perhaps meditation will help you find your way, as it has helped me find mine. So we see Saki here trying to meditate. But then Kitsune comes in. And he goes, well, who are you? You will find your legacy hidden in the floor. In the floor? So as Kitsune leaves, in her human form, she looks back and she sees Saki opening up the floorboards of this old shed. And he opens the box of the Ashinohumitsu. And then, meanwhile, we see that Donatello is changing attire. So nice little segue there. You guys do know that you could have done this before we got here. You had plenty of time. Raph goes, yeah, sure we could. Sure we could have, you know, except Donatello does machines. I love that line right there. And Donatello goes, are you ever going to let me live down that screen name? Raph goes, I'm thinking no. Leo, he's still looking at the track and he goes, hey, cut him some slack, Raph. His tracking shuriken works perfectly. Michelangelo, awesome, I was helping him build more all day. And I love Donatello in the background just kind of looking slyly at Michelangelo and goes, he sat next to me and read a comic book while I soldered. So that's Michelangelo's version of helping. He's like, okay, I helped keep him company. Now, what's the deal with this professor guy? Leonardo, he's smiling, once again, kind of a rare sight. The foot took him. He's either working with them or he's onto something valuable. So what's the play, coach? We shall follow the signal to its source, and then we shall infiltrate. So we see this great shot of the Turtles scaling up this building to make their way to confront Hamato Yoshi and Dr. Miller here. And I love that Splinter. He doesn't even need the spikes. He's just crawling up Spider-Man style this building here. Great stuff. Casey and April, they're in the elevator. Casey goes, maybe you should have stayed in the van. April, not backing down, she goes, maybe you should have too. Casey here, somebody's got to try to get the professor out of here while the guys deal with that Arrow Girl, right? And April, and that's why I came. He might not find the hockey mask as charming as I do. So a little bit of flirting here. Now, this is 10 years ago. I miss this from Casey and April. Just a little bit of flirting, a little bit of that. We haven't gotten them in quite some time. Now, look, I know that Casey and April have always had a thing. But really, in the comics, we don't get a ton of it. There was the Capo and AC storyline in IDW, but really, in the 100 issues, I know it's not really a love story, but I would love to see them be together for a long span of time. Now, in Volume 4, we do see that, and I really like that dynamic, but we haven't really seen that since then. That was 20 years ago, the Volume 4 stuff. So, yeah, I would definitely love to see more of that. So finally, the elevator doors open up, and Casey goes, ah, nuts, because there is about 100-some foot soldier guards looking back at him like, huh? So here they go. They've got a fight. But I love Michelangelo. So they hop in from one of the windows as the elevator doors had opened for Casey and April, and he goes, trick or treat! And the Turtles, as they're fighting the Foot Clan, Donatello goes, trick or treat? Really? That's the best you could come up with? And Raph, as he's kicking another Foot Clan guy, he goes, seriously? You had a whole climb to think of something better. So once again, always cracking jokes as they're fighting. I always love this. Michelangelo, he's boogieing it on the floor, and he goes, I was going to follow up with smell my feet. Get it? Because, yeah, and I respect that because of the Foot Clan pun there. Of course, Leonardo, Mikey, focus. So as the Foot Clan's battling the Turtles, unbeknownst to Shredder, Dr. Miller is talking to Shredder. He goes, this is incredible. There's no telling what I could discover with so much of the manuscript at hand. Shredder goes, I'm pleased to hear this. I just need to check this against my... What is this? So Dr. Miller, he doesn't know why Shredder's angry all of a sudden, but Shredder sees the tracker on Dr. Miller's briefcase. I'm sorry? So Shredder slaps Karai and he goes, you incompetent fool! How did you not see this? You've given away our position! Master? So one of the Foot Clan runs in. What? The enemy is here, Master. Enemy? So Dr. Miller, he has no idea what's going on. Enemy? What enemy? The only one that matters. So Shredder throws down the tracker. It busts. Shredder calls for Alipex. Yes, Master. Stand watch over this man. But that's a... So, of course, Dr. Miller's never seen a giant mutant before. And this is new to him. Alipex. I love how intimidating and fierce Mateus' Sanluko's Alipex is. Shredder, he goes, a mutant, Dr. Miller, and a loyal follower. She'll keep you safe. Dr. Miller, why does she have to? I mean, this is the second attack today. Saki, our enemy, Doctor, fears the knowledge that you give to us, and under the mistaken impression that they can somehow prevent it. And I love the purple mask for Shredder here. I shall remind them of the natural order of things. Their destiny is to fail, whereas my destiny is to conquer. So Shredder confronts the Turtles here in the elevator. Great. What a cool shot here. I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like this fishbowl perspective here, right? Where you've got this Foot Clan member being attacked from the front. Donatello's on the side, and with the curve of the angles here, his bow's curved and everything. Leonardo's fighting on the right. Michelangelo's in the middle here, facing off some people. Raph's taking a guy out. April and Casey, they're looking in horror at Oroku Saki. Saki's about to attack Splinter. I mean, it's such a great perspective in this kind of fishbowl mirror perspective here for the final page. And then the last two panels of the book, we see the flashback of a younger Oroku Saki looking at the Ashi no Himitsu. He opens the book, and we see him cover his mouth like he cannot believe what he is reading. And that's how issue 2 ends. So guys, originally I was going to have this be one particular Saturday morning slice, but I don't think you wanted to hear me just drone on and on for an hour. So I've kind of divided this up into two episodes. I hope you didn't mind that. And next month we will cover issues 3 and 4. So guys, I hope you all enjoyed. I'm so excited about this storyline. I love Matias Santoluco's storytelling. I think my favorite part of issue 2 is the dynamic. Me being a father, I really was like, wow, this hits. The burden that poor Master Maji had in raising his son, trying not to tell him about his cursed destiny. Maybe thinking that somehow he could overcome it based on what the monk had told him. So he's trying his best to teach young Saki morals. But you know what it really reminds me of? It reminds me of Star Wars in a way, you know, with Darth Vader and with Luke Skywalker and, you know, destined to be a bad person. Is that the case? Can environmental factors influence that destiny? So that's what this story kind of hits around to. And I really like that about it. So guys, if you have any feedback regarding these first two issues of The Secret History of the Foot Clan, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is turtlesforeverpodcast@gmail.com. And once again, thank you, Nick Baxter, for the phone call. And if you guys want to call in, our TurtleCom hotline is 865-312-7260. Guys, can't thank you all enough for listening. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the month. Here's to hope you enjoy your friends, enjoy your family, and a mega slice pepperoni and hot dog pizza. Oof, Heartburn Central. Cowabunga, dudes!